Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Second half of the program begins right now, right? Second half of the program begins right now. Soren Petro with you. Thanks for joining us on a sun-splashed day 22 of the program versus COVID-19. Wednesday, April 1st. The fool is who? Who's the fool for April Fool's Day today? Anybody got anyone? Anyone feeling like going out and playing a practical joke in the midst of a stay-at-home order?
So,
we have the best time.
One of my favorite Simpsons episodes is the April Fool's episode where Bart shakes up the beer and then Homer opens it and it ends up exploding and he goes to the hospital. And I was like, oh, I should put that April Fool's before it explodes in the intro. And I was like, no, that's probably not the best idea.
Yeah, too soon. On that one. Too soon on that one. Let's talk some Chiefs football as Mark Boerichter joins us here in the program. Of course, former Chiefs wide receiver. Our lead analyst, co-host, if you will, of the Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show. You hear every Sunday or Monday or whatever it might be before the Chiefs games right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Mark, how are you, my friend?
Doing well, friend. Doing well, fellas. Crazy times are living in, but things are well, so no complaints.
Good. Glad to hear it. Let's start with this. News coming out today that Jadeveon Clowney's asking price has gone down. He remains like the big ticket free agent that's still unsigned. I think that's also part of the holdup on Chris Jones. Not that they play the same position. Clowney more of a pure end. Jones playing D-tackle in a 4-3, end in a 3-4, more flexibility, and I think Chris Jones is better. But I think if you can get Clowney for just cash and not have to give up picks if you're a team, you'd like to try to do that. So until he comes off the board, I don't know that we're getting the full interest level, the full attention of teams that need defensive linemen, focusing on making a deal with the Chiefs and, frankly, Ngakoue in Jacksonville. Should the Chiefs be thinking about, you know, making a deal – for making an offer for Ngakoue, making a trade offer and then signing him? Of course, they'd have to get the deal done. Or making an offer on Jadeveon Clowney so that they still land an expensive and theoretically, if you agree that those guys are good players, good defensive linemen while trading Chris Jones. Is that something that they should be entertaining right now if the asking price on Clowney is coming down?
Well, I think they should be entertaining anything at this point, and I think that's what they're doing. It's been interesting to me in the times that we're living in here with free agency going on that we've seen, you know, we usually see the first splash into free agency, right, with some big moves, and we saw that with, you know, the Stephon Diggs trade and, a few of the other trades that happened. Of course, the Buckner trade. Specifically to, you know, a defensive lineman piece, and that first wave of free agency. But we really haven't seen the, you know, quote, second wave of free agency. It's almost like it's jumped to that third wave of the value guys already out there with some of the moves we're seeing now. I think there's a lot of uncertainty just with the times we're in right now and a lot of patience going on leading up to potentially what's going to happen with this draft moving on. Because teams just don't, you know, you can't really get guys in for physicals and different things like that. But to your question, Saran, I think they should be looking at every potential opportunity that could help this football team. You know, right now, I fully expect them to trade Chris Jones. I'm in agreement with you that they gave him their best offer a year ago, and he bet on himself and turned it down, which is 100% fine and his right to do. And he's got an opportunity to come back to the Chiefs now at the franchise tag number. Whether that'll happen or not remains to be seen. But I think he's either going to, you know, hold out under that franchise tag or eventually they're going to trade him. But I think the Chiefs need to be looking at every single option. You know, I know a lot's been made this week of them only having, you know, less than $200 in cap space. But there's a lot of moves that they can make to free up cap space. I mean, people just need to be patient and see how it plays out.
Yeah, no, and to me, one of the things that I think, and I agree, and then listen, they can cut Watkins, they can cut Duvernay-Tardif, they could renegotiate either one of those guys, they could renegotiate and extend Travis Kelce. There is a lot of money, so I'm not panicked that they're not going to be able to draft. I think it is of note that they right now couldn't draft. And I think they're capping. I'm going to talk to Seth Kaiser about this later, about because one of the pieces he wrote, he kind of defends Chris Jones, the player. I don't think the player needs any defending. I think what needs explaining is how to make it all work, how to become a better 53-man roster with Chris Jones versus, say, two or three players and a couple of draft picks that'll turn into a couple of players. How, you know, the cap space being used on just one guy is better than the cap space being used on, you know, three to five guys. That, to me, is the explanation that has to be made. And, you know, everybody just keeps thinking in terms of fitting Chris Jones into this year's salary cap, but it's not just this year. I know that they've got, I think, $141 million signed in contracts for next year, and you're like, well, the cap's at 240, and it's going to go even higher. Okay, yes, that's absolutely true. That is a fact. However, the part that people don't talk about is that, like, there's only one corner signed for next year. There's only
right.
one running back signed for next year. It's like you only got, like, 20 guys that are taking up that $140 million. So you got to find, like, 33 other guys in $100 million. That's an average of $3 million per, right? And that's without the extension. Patrick Mahomes is not one of the guys that signed. Okay, he's not on that list. You know, and Chris Jones isn't. When you get all that onto the books, it's not the $100 million worth of room you think it is once you put real players that can play under the cap, right?
Oh, I agree. 100% agree. And that's why I think the Chiefs are looking at this going, you know, we made our offer 2 years ago, you turned it down. We can fit you in this year under the franchise tag, and we're willing to do that, but we're not going to go any further with it. They're still going to take care of Patrick Mahomes. Now, there technically isn't any rush there either, right? But you want to keep number 15 happy at some point. And you just hit it on the head about the secondary with only one corner sign. I mean, that money looks good now, and that space looks good now for a year from now, but at the same time, to your point, you've got to fit in all these players into that. And that factor into that piece. You know, the other thing that people aren't talking about necessarily, and I don't necessarily know if he wants it yet, but, you know, if Travis Kelce, is he going to want an extension and a new deal at some point? You know, things change when you win the Super Bowl. And, of course, I never won the Super Bowl, but when you look at this, you know, players, number one, want to try to win a championship, but they want to get paid. And so when you have already won a ring, like these guys have, and now you have the opportunity to get paid, that's your next goal. And it doesn't necessarily matter where you're going. You want to be on a competitive team where you have an opportunity to win a championship, but it's about getting paid. And with championships comes, you know, guys overvaluing themselves in some cases and thinking they're worth more than what they are for teams. But this is about the long term for this franchise, and I just don't see them moving forward with Chris Jones in a long-term deal. When you've got Patrick Mahomes to take care of, you've got other guys to take care of. You can fit him in this year if he wants to play under the franchise tag. And it's been intriguing to me, too, to see, you know, the lack of quote, reports out there about, you know, potential talks and things like that. It seems like everything's kind of at a standstill. And, you know, it only takes one team out of the 32 to want to trade for you and pay you. But at the same time, you know, maybe the market's not quite as hot for him right now, or maybe his asking price is too high.
Yeah, that's my next thing. And that is, okay, he still sits here. And we pointed out that Frank Clark didn't get traded until 2 days before the draft. So, you know, there's no reason to panic that, like, the market's come and gone. But, I think it is nerve-wracking, right? We're going to see how cool the nerves are for Brett Veach as he plays this out. But I'm looking here at all the free agents that have signed. And the biggest deal, Byron Jones was considered the best corner on the market. Stephon Gilmore is considered the number one corner. So he's not the number one corner in football, but he's considered a very good one. He got a 5-year, $82.5 million deal. Robert Quinn is 30, but he led defensive ends in pressure percentage or in percentage of beating his man with a pass rush move in under 2.5 seconds. That's like a new stat that ESPN's come up with. And he was number one in the NFL at doing that. He got 5 years, $70 million. There aren't a bunch of $100 million contracts. And while the Chiefs won a Super Bowl after trading for and then giving one of those $100 million contracts, is it possible that all the leagues figured out that, like, look, Khalil Mack, we all laughed at the Raiders, but the Bears in the second year of having Khalil Mack on that monster deal, they didn't do anything, right? That wasn't the key to winning, was having some great $100 million pass rusher or $100 million defensive lineman. Eric Eager in the analytics community, which, by the way, Pro Football Focus has a division that works with the NFL teams, right? They sell their analytics, their right. super advanced analytics, to the NFL teams. Eric Eager is one of their data scientists, and he constantly says those contracts don't work. Is it possible that the league is now adhering to that? They're listening to it. They're buying into it. And they're just not giving out $100 million contracts. And so the holdup is more so that maybe the Chiefs can get what they want. But as soon as anybody talks to Chris Jones' agent and he says, well, I want the Aaron Donald deal or whatever number he's saying, they go, you're not worth it. We're out. We're not trading for him. That the problem lies with Chris Jones, that he's pricing himself out of this market and any other market, and we're going to end up with a standstill on draft day or maybe even beyond because the Chiefs aren't going to give him the money and nobody else in the league is going to give him the money.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to look at because, first of all, I don't think he's Aaron Donald. He doesn't play the run near as well as Aaron Donald does as an overall player. I think he's better than Buckner. But this is a unique situation when you get into the franchise tagging a player and then trying to trade them because there are two factors involved. And that is not just, hey, we're just trading a player here with a contract that you know he's going to get and we just want him out of here, right? You've got to deal with the demands of what the player wants as well. And I believe that there are teams out there that are obviously willing to get a first-round pick and possibly more for Chris Jones, but aren't willing to go to the numbers that he wants to be at. And, you know, in this case, usually it takes two to tango in this trading aspect, but in this case, it's a triangle and trying to figure all that out. You know, you mentioned Brett Beach, and we'll see how the nerves are with him and how cool he plays this leading up to the draft because there is time. And I think this is a complicated situation, and you're waiting for teams are either waiting for demands to go down from the Chiefs side of things, or you know, more for Chris Jones' demands to go down. So I think there's some. Again, I'm not privy to the entire situation, but I think that you could deduct in looking at the situation that there's some fault on Chris Jones' side that his price tag may be too high.
I don't have any information that has been given to me on that front, but I'm just like, I wonder, you know, look, if you're like, okay, yeah, we'll give you what you want. You want two, you know, a second this year and a second next year. Okay. We'll give you that. Or you want a second and a third this year. Okay. We'll give you that. And then you get down to negotiating with Jones and he throws a number at you and it's like, no, we can't afford that. So we're going to pass. We'll just keep our picks. And so that's one of the things that's got to, you know, you got to have somebody that not only is willing to give up the draft picks, but then is willing to pay the price. I do think when Clowney comes off the board, there are going to be teams that have cap room and look at him and go, okay, this could be the final piece, right? Like if I'm the Bucks, I'm interested. I've got Tom Brady. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, we like him for 2 years, but we really think he's going to play for more than that. Shut up. Shut your mouth.
Right. Right.
I don't even want to hear that. If you're the Bucks, you are all in for the next 2 years, right? Just like the Colts are. The Colts are all in around Phillip Rivers. That's why they made the move for Buckner. You bring in an aging quarterback, you're all in. Like I would think the Chargers, if they end up signing Cam Newton, which I heard today somebody was saying, well, listen, if you can't do a real physical with your doctors on Cam Newton, you're not signing Cam Newton. So they don't expect Cam Newton to sign until the COVID all clear is given. And they said, okay, at that point, maybe he signs because you can get an actual medical, you know, full medical background on him. But so I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But if Clowney will come off the board, then you maybe, you know, there's some teams that will get more interested. I just think that the team that ought to be doing it is the Bucks. And, you know, because you're clearly trying to say, I don't think Bruce Arians is coaching for 20 more years. I know Tom Brady is probably going to be lucky to play for 2 years at this point at 43 years old. I mean, I think the collective record of every quarterback 43 or older is like 2-6. That's it. There's been like 8 starts by quarterbacks Tom Brady's age or older, ever. Now, I think he'll do better than that because he's done everything else better than that his whole career. But it I don't think that there's, you know, 4 years. So I would think that the Bucs are the team that says, listen, every big gun talent we can get, let's get it here and let's push as hard as we can for the next 2 years with Tom Brady. So I got to think somebody gets desperate at the end, don't they?
Well, I think so. And then to use, you know, I love Andrew Brandt, who was a longtime Packers executive and is now out there and uses the term that all the time as a former sports agent as well, with deadlines spur action. And the deadline of the draft will, I think, ultimately spur the action. I'm in agreement with you that there are a few dominoes that probably need to fall, and the Jadeveon Clowney piece is one of them. But you know, you got to look around the league and figure out what are the teams that want to go all in or that are willing to. And the Bucs obviously have the cap room. It seems like a logical destination for me when you look at Chris Jones, because they've got the cap room to pay him. They've got a draft, the draft picks that they can use, and you want to build around Tom Brady and go all in for 2 years. So eventually they're going to draft another quarterback, or maybe they'll end up going a free agent route in some capacity as well. But you're not talking about Tom Brady playing for multiple years, you know, past 1 or 2 years here. So they seem like a logical destination. Again, I think there's a lot of dominoes that have to fall. I think, again, that the times that we're in right now and the lack of being able to travel and bring guys in and do the things that they want has really slowed the pace of this entire thing as well. I think there's just a lot of factors involved.
We're talking to Mark Boerichter here in the program. DeMarcus Robinson back for the Chiefs. Sammy Watkins still on the roster. What do you make of where the wide receivers are right now?
I like where the wide receivers are. I thought it was a good move to bring DeMarcus Robinson back. I was kind of surprised that there wasn't more of a market for him out in the open. You didn't hear much about him. You know, the Robbie Anderson deal, who I think Robbie Anderson is not worth the money that he's getting paid with all the off-field problems and different things that he's had going. But bringing DeMarcus back at depth, you know, you got Byron Pringle still around. You've got Tyreek Hill. Right now, Sammy Watkins is still on this roster. That remains to be seen whether they end up cutting him. I think that they're, you know, trying to work out an extension with him to ease the cap space and keep him around. Because this was always a 2-year deal, and either cut him or extend him anyway with his contract. So I like where they're at. I like where their weapons are at on offense. You know, bringing Damian Williams back in the fold at running back. But this is a team that, you know, Travis Kelce isn't getting any younger. He's in his most productive years. He's been, and I expect him to continue with that. But and let's not forget, you know, Mecole Hardman as well in there. This team is based off of speed. They're based off of being a run-and-gun type of team that they just had so many weapons across the board. I mean, I was ready to get rid of DeMarcus after, you know, the opening playoff game against the Texans when he dropped 3 balls in the first quarter. And I think most Chiefs fans were. But I think he has a nice piece to the puzzle for this team. So I like where they're at offensively. You know, I'm worried about the defensive side, specifically the secondary and the depth there. I think we'll still be continuing to look at that piece and see what they do there.
Do you think bringing Watkins back, extending him, obviously the amount is paramount to whether or not to answering this question, but just in general, do you think more, do you think Sammy Watkins brings enough? I mean, like as far as taking away doubles for guys, I mean, the production doesn't warrant the contract he had. So ultimately it's going to come down to the money, but you think Sammy Watkins is a big part of what they do offensively?
I think he's a bigger part than what people realize, for sure. You know, I really do. He has his moments when he looks like he's disinterested on the field to me from time to time, not necessarily dialed in. But, you know, and the production doesn't live up to what the contract is. But, you know, there's something to be said for keeping guys together if you feel that's what's going to continue to vault you forward and continue to keep your quarterback, you know, comfortable and keeping guys on the same page. But, you know, they're going to have to – this is a really deep – this is what complicates matters, sir. And this is a really deep, you know, wide receiver draft as well. When you talk and look at the experts out there and talking about getting good value guys, even in the fourth, fifth rounds for wide receivers, there's just that many out there this year that I would expect them to draft another wide receiver at some point, regardless of what happens with the Sammy Watkins situation. But if the numbers are right, and even if you have to extend him, you know, that may be what you have to do if that's really what, you know, ultimately they want to do. Sammy Watkins is in a good leverage situation right now with the Chiefs, though, because they've got to do a deal with him, either extend him or cut him. The question I would have, and the Chiefs are probably saying this, but what is, you know, what's your value out on the open market? You know, this would be his fourth team, right? After this year in his short career, or in his career. And he's had an injury history. That's the other part to it that you got to look in. So, it's hard to project this when you look at a crystal ball, but I mean, if the numbers are right, I certainly would like to have it back on the team.
You just said you think the Chiefs go or pick up a wide receiver in this draft. I think they're going to pick up a running back. They only have two corners on the roster, so theoretically they have three now. I'm sorry, they send the kid who's played a handful of plays over his first 4 years for a couple of teams. So three corners. You know, they seemingly could use some depth at the interior of the offensive line, but they only have five picks. Like, the fact that they haven't gotten a corner, to me, again, and we don't need to go back and rehash Chris Jones, but doesn't it kind of point to the fact that they think somewhere along the way they're getting more picks?
I think so. I certainly think that that's the case. And, you know, Breshad Breeland, right, hasn't signed anywhere. I don't think the market for him is going to be as great as other people do. I mean, you know, he had a really good year for the Chiefs this past year. But, you know, it was the second team in 2 years, or third team in 3 years on things. And so, you know, I like the markets out there for him as well. I'd like to see him back. I thought he played extremely well. He brings a physical presence at the corner. But, yeah, this team has to acquire more picks. They do. And this is where, you know, sitting at 32 is a great spot to be, I think, because, you know, in the past we've seen Brett Veach be super aggressive in trading up or, you know, using those first-round picks for other acquisitions. But I think this is a time that they've got to be acquiring more players. Because you are looking to extend Patrick Mahomes' contract, it's probably going to be, and most likely will be, a record contract for a quarterback in this league. And you've got to fit all the pieces of the 53-man roster together, all these rosters and the expanded rosters now. But you've got to fit them all underneath the salary cap. You've got to figure out a way to do it. And you got to find some guys that can be contributors and be players for you in the mid rounds. And this team has been pretty good about that in terms of finding contributors in those rounds. And then, of course, you know, when the time comes to have to pay them, you have to make that decision to pay them. But you've got to find the cheaper talent out there in young guys. And, you know, whether that's in the secondary, whether it's depth in the offensive line, whether it's obviously taking a running back at some point, whether it's wide receiver, wherever defensive line, wherever you feel that is, you know, the draft is such a crapshoot anyway. You're better off throwing more numbers at it and acquiring more guys and hope to develop them. I think that's the one unique piece about the Chiefs organization right now with Andy Reid and the coaching staff, is they seem to understand how to develop most guys and young guys and bring them along and make them valuable contributors, and not just contributors, but playmakers on both sides of the ball.
Do you worry? I mean, they are bringing, you know, seemingly bringing back just about everybody they can, and they're holding on to Watkins. It seems like either Watkins or Jones is going to be back, is how it kind of feels to me. Breeland hasn't signed anywhere. I almost wonder if it's like, hey, hold on, you know, we've got an agreement. We just got to get rid of one of these two guys, and then we'll bring you back. I wonder if they're not going to get like two of those three before it's all said and done.
I think there's a lot of that going on, to be honest with you, right now. I think there's a lot of that going on, with Patrick Mahomes, to say, hey, we're going to take care of you. We got to sort this all out. I think there's a lot of that. I think Breshad Breeland, we bring that up. I brought that up, you know, third team in 3 years this past year for the Chiefs. Well,
really fourth, you know, if you count that he signed with the Panthers, and then the contract got voided because he failed the physical.
Right. And you look at guys like that, and like I said before, I've said this before, right, that guys want to go get paid. Well, sometimes the market's not there for you. If you've been on four teams in 3 years, okay, just because you had one good solid year doesn't mean you're going to all of a sudden go break the bank and get paid. So there's also those guys that sometimes when you get to a point in your career, you look at it and say, you know what, my situation's really good here. I can be the starting corner. I can be a value contributor on this team, and they're going to pay me a little bit of money to stay here. This might be the best option for me. I think there's a lot of this going on, quite frankly, with the Chiefs and with a lot of guys. And it does happen that way a lot where it's, hey, we have an agreement in place. Call us if somebody else calls you. But in other words, we've got this agreement in place. Give us a few weeks here to get this all figured out, and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, I can definitely see a scenario like that. Do you worry about them not being hungry enough? If they bring the whole band back together and it's, you know, the whole entire core of the team are guys that have a ring, does that worry you at all, or is too much made out of that?
I think there's a little bit too much made out of that. I think in the situation we're in right now with this COVID-19 virus and everything, I think it actually helps the Chiefs a little bit in terms of being hungry, because they're not coming back to work out anytime soon, right? And, you know, the timeline for the NFL is, you know, some people are still saying that they may not even play this fall yet. But I think this horrible situation worldwide actually helps the Chiefs and helps the guys, because they're going to stay away a little bit more. It'll help their hunger when they come back, because they're going to get right back into it and have to keep going once it finally gets kicked out. But there's always the worry a little bit of the Super Bowl letdown piece. I don't think this is a solid locker room, and I don't think that you're going to get too many disgruntled guys because they haven't got a new contract extension or anything like that yet with the team. I think the guys that know they're going to get paid know they're going to get paid at some point. So I think you can throw that piece out the window, but there's always a little bit of worry about the letdown. I think the biggest piece to me is can Brett Beach and Andy Reid put this roster together with enough guys that can contribute for the potential losses they're going to have of players.
We're talking to Mark Boerichter here in the program. Final four time for you, Mark. Four quickies brought to you by our friends at the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. You can find out more about their ortho-urgent care that's open 7 days a week by going to kcoi.com. I will start you with this. What are you binge-watching with all your time at home?
Well, I've finished the Tiger King and finished that early on.
Okay.
Highly recommend it. It's a train wreck. It's multiple train wrecks, actually, which is fun to watch from that side of things. I've got one episode of Ozark season 3 to watch, most likely tonight. And then the wife and I have started Homeland from season 1. We've never watched a single episode of that, and that came out, I think, what, 2011? So we started watching that. So that's what we've been watching.
That's a pretty good list. I like that. All right, Homeland. I've heard that a couple of times now. I've heard Ozark a lot, and, of course, Tiger King seems to be – I'm like the last guy in America to start watching it. Started last night. So looking forward to diving in. It's just kind of a scene setter, the first episode, I could tell.
Sure. I mean, it's amazing how many different twists. It's not like this stunning twist, but it's unbelievable twist that happens from episode to episode that just keeps coming, and you're just it's impossible to not stop watching it.
Okay.
That way.
Okay. Does the season start on time?
Yes, I think it will. I think they'll figure out a way. I mean, a lot of factors obviously go into this beyond anybody's control at this point, but I think they do. September, the 1st of September seems like a long way away right now. I know it's April 1st, but, you know, these last 3-4 weeks have felt like an entire year in a lot of ways, but I think that they will start on time.
Do you have a dream draft pick for the Chiefs?
No, I don't. I don't. I don't have a dream draft pick. I haven't looked at a ton of the guys yet, to be honest with you. Probably a lot of that's been because there's just been so much going on with everything that I haven't had a chance to really dive into it yet. So I don't really have one at this point.
Go look up Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
That's
running back
LSU.
Yeah, that's my guy.
I think one of the ideal guys, I tell you this, I think one of the ideal guys is Isaiah Simmons from Clemson, right? Like, just in terms of Kansas City kid, it'd be awesome to have him here, but they're not going to be in a position to get him at all. But
to get who?
Isaiah Simmons, the linebacker slash safety from Clemson. That'd be a kid. That'd be a guy just with how dynamic he is and his flexibility. I think he'd be fantastic, but they're going to have no shot at getting him. So.
He would be fantastic. All right, and finally, how many touchdown passes are you feeling for Patrick Mahomes in 2020?
How many did he have this last year? Again, now.
What do you have, 28, 29? Hang on, I'll tell you 1 second. He had loading. 26.
I'm gonna say 40 this year. I'm going to say 40.
Yeah. I like that number, too. I'm going to go with, like, 42 or 44. I just want him to rip off, like, you know, 5, 6, 10, 40-plus touchdown seasons, something like that.
That'd be awesome.
Time to get at it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mark, always great talking to you, my friend. I appreciate the time. Stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You bet. Mark Polrich, the former Chiefs wide receiver, and, of course, you hear him with us on the Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show every Sunday, getting ready for the Chiefs. Always good to catch up with Mark Boerichter. We will take a break, come back, talk a little bit more, a couple thoughts maybe left over or that I had since yesterday's story coming out about the transcripts. Read through a bunch of the transcripts of David Beatty, Jeff Long, the testimony in the lawsuit of David Beatty, and DB Sports. That's his company. Against KU. We'll touch on that next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
You look in your eyes and you see the back of their head. You know, it's a real glaring look, and they're like this, you know, a little bit nervous.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good sense into the hour answer. What school won the last national... try that again. Take two. What school won the last national championship game not played in a dome? I know you know the answer to this one.
I do. I know the answer. 1996, and it was in New Jersey, right?
Yep, the Meadowlands. Kentucky knocked off a game Syracuse squad.
Kentucky Wildcats. I can't even complain. We were grossly outclassed.
67.
I was quite proud of the team just for making it a game all the way into the final 2 minutes because the firepower on Kentucky was prohibitively better than what we were rocking there at Syracuse that year. That's the Final Four and the run to the final game that Jim Boeheim needed and kind of got the Syracuse fans off his back. It was, you know, he had been to the finals in 87, but – you know, then they went on probation in 93, and they hadn't done a lot, and so they were really on him. And then he took that six seed all the way, right? They were a six, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Took them all the way to the championship game, and that kind of backed people off. That was a big one. We're playing for Great Cajun Food from Jazz. You can pick that up on your way home. Order it at jazzkitchen.com. That's jazzkitchen.com. Out at Silverstein Ice Center's Arena, right next to Silverstein Ice Center's Arena in Independence, in the Wonderful Legends Shopping Center is where you will find them in KCK, and then the original at 39th and State Line, right by the KU Med Center. Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen takeout. Great, great seafood options as well, by the way, for your Fridays. If you're getting tired of making fish sticks or something for your Fridays and you're a fish eater on Fridays like me, then get you some great, great, so many great seafood options, of course, with great Cajun flavors. If you go to jazzkitchen.com, give yourself a break and pick it up and take it home. Great, great local company. Vic and his staff have just been doing great food, great locally owned and operated company for years and years and years in Kansas City, one of our great sponsors. So go see our friends at Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen, on your way home tonight or whenever you need yourself a little takeout dinner or even lunch. At Jazz. Our thanks to Mark Boerichter joining us there in our last segment, talking some Chiefs football. We'll talk some more. Chris Jones with Seth Kaiser, great piece that he wrote a couple of days ago. We'll dive into that, into some of the stuff he's talked about in his great piece. And then also I want to touch on right here a little bit about David Beatty, the transcripts, digging through them, reading through the transcripts, and there's hundreds and hundreds of pages of transcripts to go through, so I can't tell you that I've read them all. But one of the things I thought was interesting that is going to be clear as to what the case David Beatty's lawyers are going to make against Kansas is there's a line of questioning where they pepper early on Jeff Long in his deposition about other times that he has been, when he's been the athletic director, that there have been violations and how he handled things. And they continually ask him, like, okay, what other times have you been around this? Well, when I took over at Arkansas, we had a track coach that had a violation. When I was at Michigan, we had a baseball player. Then we had a basketball investigation. And then they get into, and one of the things that's interesting, there's clearly some tension as the line of questioning starts going down about the investigation of the Kansas basketball team. And there's lawyers there from Kansas in the room. And it's obvious that they say, listen, we're not answering any questions that have anything to do with any other investigation here at Kansas. That's not going to happen. Jeff Long is not going to answer those. The lawyer for David Beatty says, well, listen, I didn't fly all the way out here to have parameters put on it, and that's not what the magistrate says. So they stop the deposition. They call the magistrate and get clarifications about what the magistrate expects Jeff Long to answer questions about. And so, and it had to do with, you know, the Kansas lawyers are talking about whether or not it will affect any appeal that they might have on the Kansas basketball question. So I thought it was interesting. I mentioned yesterday, I believe that the comments, you know, the references to comments that Jeff Long may have made that were inappropriate towards like a female booster. I said, my opinion is that, you know, that's a pressure point. That's trying to put pressure on. And by the way, Kansas vehemently denies that testimony. But I think those are put out there to try to put pressure on Jeff Long in Kansas to come to a settlement. Like, listen, we're going to make this as ugly and messy as possible, so you might as well just give us our $3 million and let's move on. So what I found interesting was they go through time and time again asking Jeff Long about standing guard, standing watch, basically over different investigations. On the KU, when they say, listen, it hasn't been determined, but there are accusations of improprieties, of violations. And he says, yes. Have you handed out any discipline or terminated anyone in the basketball program? He says, no. They said, well, when are you going to do that? Well, after all the information's gathered. Right? Then they bring up Les Miles. Have there been any violations of Les Miles? He didn't want to answer that, but then he ends up answering it. And he says, yeah, there was secondary coaches, you know, or analysts, you know, for lack of a better term, that were doing coaching. And yes, I have handed out the penalties. They were given 2 weeks in the office, and we came up with having them wear different colored shirts so that people know who the coaches are, like kind of insinuating that, you know, people were asking them questions, so they just answer the question, not really that they were out there doing it. What they're clearly trying to set up is that, wait a minute, you're waiting for the Kansas thing, the Kansas basketball thing, to be heard and go through the whole process and potentially even an appeal process before you're going to hand out any penalties or terminations to anybody on the basketball side. Yet here you are terminating David Beatty, and it hasn't even been settled on with the NCAA whether or not he actually committed the violations that you're accusing him of.
That's right.
They're trying to set the precedent that throughout his career he's never fired anybody until the whole process was over, but here he's already fired David Beatty for cause because, you know, in this situation where in no other situation in his career as an athletic director has Jeff Long ever handed that down. Now, I think the Kansas flip side to that, I think the rebuttal to that would be, and I think that's a good tactic to win a legal case. I'm not saying it's good or bad or right or wrong. I'll say again, I think this is a fight between a multi-million dollar, you know, business, for lack of a better term, incorporated, Kansas Athletics Incorporated, and a multimillionaire coach, right? And all Kansas fans are caught in the middle of it. I think it's a good legal strategy to try to, again, put pressure on them and say, like, listen, this is out of the norm. He was going to fire David Beatty all along. David Beatty did nothing wrong. That's why he deserves his $3 million. But I think on the Kansas side, you would say, well, listen, We didn't say the reason we fired him was because of the violation. We fired him because he wasn't winning games. But when we found out about the violation, then we realized that, well, no, that's with cause because he did have a violation, and therefore we don't have to pay him the $3 million. Like, no, we didn't engineer it that way, but once we found out about it, then yes, okay? Yes, then it became we fired him with cause. That'll be the rebuttal. I thought that was interesting. The other thing that I think is interesting is, why is David Beatty not coaching again? Right? Why doesn't he have a job? Anybody got a reason as to why David Beatty's not working? I think this is precarious. I don't know that there's anything, you know, I don't know that, I don't think it has really anything to do with whether or not they win this case. But I got to thinking about something. Why doesn't he have a job? He was considered one of the best recruiters out there, right? He was working for Kevin Sumlin, and Texas A&M was recruiting at a high level, and frankly, their recruiting didn't go as well once David Beatty left. Why wouldn't he be gobbled up? And we heard immediately after he was fired, he worked as a consultant for Texas in at least the Big 12 championship game and maybe the Big 12 championship game and their bowl game against Georgia that year in the Sugar Bowl. But then, and there's a story out there in May that says that him being hired as a full-time coach was so far along at Texas that he had moved to Austin. Why didn't he get the job? In March, he sued for his $3 million. I think this will be interesting to watch what happens with David Beatty's career going forward, because he's not working now for what I can determine is one of three reasons. Because Texas had already known, it was in December. He was told he was fired on November 4th, actually fired on, you know, let go on November 28th. They told him on the 4th, you're out. He said he'd coach the rest of the season. He was let go after the Texas game on the 28th. Texas hires him on as a consultant for the Big 12 championship game. Then in December, Kansas announces that they are terminating him with cause. In March, he sues. And in May, there's a story that he's so far along that he's moved to Austin, or at some point in this process moved to Austin. So why didn't he ultimately end up with a job at Texas or someplace else? Well, one, either his lawsuit scared everybody away, right? That no school wants to hire a guy that they feel like, listen, if we fire this guy, we're going to have to go through a lawsuit. That's something that everybody who's ever terminated in their minds, what they think is unjustly, has to decide. Am I going to sue because I can be blackballed as a guy that every time I get fired, if it doesn't go well, I'm going to sue, and so nobody ever hires me? That happens in the real world. It sucks.
Branded.
It's not right, but it happens in the real world. That could be it. Yeah, okay.
You're branded as that yeah. type of guy. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Danger.
Exactly. Number two, they worked with him a little bit and went, this guy didn't know anything. We don't really want him, right? We changed our minds. Could be as simple as that. You know, it damaged his reputation. The whole process of him being fired damaged his reputation, and now he can't get a job. And that's the one that I think is interesting from this standpoint. If that ends up being the case and he wins this lawsuit, and he wins his $3 million, then doesn't he have a civil suit on the other side of this?
Most definitely.
To sue for damages that now he can't get a job because of the damages done by Kansas trying to fire him, improperly fire him, trying to allege that he was fired with cause when his case at that point, what I'm saying, if he wins this, then I think he's got another lawsuit if no one's offering him a job, because he was considering a recruiting guru. And everybody, we've seen, John Blake was a hot mess at Oklahoma. Violations all over the place. Didn't win anything. And he's coached at numerous places since. But David Beatty can't get a job? I mean, that's one of the things that this is, I'll go back to my original point, and then we'll take a break, as to why you don't just give the guy the $3 million and move on. And, you know, I was asking around about David Beatty. I'm like, well, you know, is the strategy just to bleed him out? Like, he doesn't want to spend you know, 500,000, 200,000, 500,000, a million, 2 million, 5 million on this lawsuit. And I was told, oh, no, no. He's got relatives that are big money people, and there is no shortage of money to fight this suit. So if Kansas's strategy is to wear him down with legal bills, I'm told he's down for the fight for the long haul and has the money to fight the lawsuit. I just keep coming back. This just still, to me, makes no sense. I think Jeff Long is a bright guy. He's been the athletic director at Arkansas for a long period of time at Pitt. Those are jobs that you don't have for the periods of times that he had by being a moron. And maybe there is some massive smoking gun that's there from the time that David Beatty was there that will come to light during the course of this trial or this lawsuit, I guess I should say. I don't know. But I still, the more I think it through on how this is going to play out, I don't get where this is a tidy ending for Kansas and where it was worth less than 3% of 1 year's budget.
Yeah, I think of your first two scenarios, I believe one more than two, because I don't think Texas would have gotten so close to him if they didn't think he knew what he was talking about. I think it's much more likely of the first two that it's because they're worried about the litigiousness of his nature, if they perceive that to be. But I think if three happens, Kansas is likely to use either one or two as their defense of it. Either he just wasn't good enough, or, I mean, I think one is more likely than two, though, the first two.
Yeah, that he's damaged goods?
That he's more likely.
Or that he's a sewer.
Scared off. He scares off people by suing. Other than his ability. Because I don't think Texas would have called him down there if they thought he knew nothing.
Right. And listen, to be honest, if that's the case, then he made a bad decision. Because I would think that he would be qualified for, you know, What do we learn that Ohio State has five coaches making over $1 million? One is the D-line coach, Larry Johnson's dad, who's known as a great recruiter.
Yep.
That you could have been the wide receivers coach and the recruiting coordinator and been making more than $1 million a year or close to it very quickly at any one of a number of Texas schools or schools close to Texas and made more than $3 million in the next 4 or 5 years. And so if that's what this was all about, you know, if you don't win, you really threw away a lot of money, right? That's to me, the whole picture of what's at stake here. Because he had earning potential. If he blew up his earning potential by suing, and now he's labeled as a guy that will sue and nobody will touch him, then this, whatever he gets out of this lawsuit, better be enough for the guy to retire. Or if this ends up being something that Kansas damaged him, and he wins this lawsuit, and they damaged his reputation, and then he comes back and wins a civil lawsuit on the other side, and Kansas thought, well, we'll just not pay him the $3 million, and we'll get away with it, and they end up paying $3 million plus legal fees, and then are in the middle of more legal fees than another lawsuit, and potentially lose another lawsuit, you're going to be saying, why didn't you give him the $3 million? I think it's interesting. We'll see how it plays out in the long run. We will take a break, come back, talk a little bit about the 14-team playoffs in the NFL. It's coming up next. Seth Kizer coming up after that here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I like pancakes. I like pancakes. I am happy. La, 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 la.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Real quick here, and Seth Kizer's coming up to start the next hour. Does the 14-team playoff, the seventh playoff team, help or hurt the Chiefs right now?
I'm going to say, oh God, the temptation to say it will help them because they're going to be the one seed a lot, but I think they're going to be the two seed a lot too, and they have to play a lot of games.
Sometimes guys get hurt, I think it's split. I think it's split. I will say this, though. I can also see the time like Mahomes misses three or four games, and so they end up going 10-6 or 9-7, and they get in as the seventh seed, and then they're ready to rock and roll and go deep the way the Packers did when they were a wild card. Only time's going to tell. I think in the end it'll help and hurt probably about the same amount. We know it would have got them in the playoffs two more times going back to the 90s, but three different times they'd had to play a game earlier. So I think it'll probably help as much as it hurts.
End of the hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC Sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense. Not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, Tom Brady will be the ninth player to wear number 12 for the Buccaneers. Who was the first to wear it? Brought to you by Good Sense.